Good. Okay. 9 a.m. Tuesday, February 21st. I'd like to call the policy and strategy meeting to order and begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kmaq, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. So do we have any announcements, acknowledgments, or recognition? No? Okay. I need an approval of the agenda. Looking for someone for an approval of the agenda. Councillor Oikle, seconded by Councillor Haysom. All those in favor? Motion passed unanimously. Oh, okay. Councillor Statton, are you in favor?
Yes.
Councillor Greek, are you in favor?
Yes.
Motion passed unanimously. I need an approval of the minutes of January 17th as circulated. Somebody like to approve that? Councillor Haysom, seconded by Councillor Moore. All those in favor? Councillor Greek?
Yes.
And Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Okay. I can hardly hear Councillor Statton. Okay. So because we're ahead, we're going to go down to 7.1. Diocesan Environmental Network. And who was presenting this? Did I have that?
That was a letter to IRCC.
Right, okay. So is Tom, are you going to review that one letter or? Yeah. Was that circulated?
Yeah, yes, it's part of the agenda.
Okay. Okay, so we don't. All right, go ahead.
So, do you want me to present?
Yep, you can.
Okay.
Thank you. So on January 6, 2023, the mayor and council received a letter from Anne-Marie Dalton from the Diocese Environmental Network, and it's about EV charging stations. So as part of its commitment to the environment, the DEN, the Anglican Diocese of Halifax and PEI, is interested in offering church parking lots and suitable locations to municipalities for the establishment of EV charging stations. They note that some other Christian denominations have also shown interest in doing the same under the umbrella of DEN. While DEN is administered by the Anglican Church, it welcomes and has members from other faith groups. So the DEN is dedicated to promoting ethical and practical responses to the climate emergency, and they see this as both a practical response and an opportunity to further serve the communities in which they're ministering, and they're offering parking lots at no cost. They want to work as much as possible with our municipality to develop the infrastructure. If this is regarded as being a potentially benefit to our municipality, they've asked us to contact them, and they provided their contact information. So we'll refer this back to staff for inclusion in our EV strategy as we roll out or look at how we're going to place EVs in our municipality.
Awesome. Thank you. So I'm going to ask Councillor Oikle, would you be prepared to move that motion, 7.1?
Certainly. To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee refer the letter from the Diocesan Environmental Network, DEN, to staff for consideration once the electric vehicle charging infrastructure study is complete, and further write a letter of response to DEN indicating the actions that will be taken. And I so move.
Thank you. Second? Seconded by Councillor Bell. All those in favor? Councillor Greek?
Yes.
Councillor Statton? Motion passed unanimously. We might be having some difficulties. I didn't hear Councillor Statton.
So the camera needs to come on.
Can you hear me now?
I can. Yeah. There you go. Are you in favor?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. All those, sorry. Motion passed unanimously. Okay. Okay, excellent. So we're going to jump down to 9.2.1 because we're ahead of schedule, the Canadian Lyme Disease Research Network request. And is Alex presenting this also?
Sarah.
I've got this one if you want. So you should have a report in with your package. A few weeks ago, as you recall, Council received a presentation from Camille Goulot, a research assistant with the University of Montreal, and Dr. Rochelot, who's also with the Lyme Disease Canadian Lyme Disease Research Network. So this group is working to identify science-based interventions to reduce the risk of Lyme disease, and they want to share science, the science, and share their experience among local partners and researchers and the University of Montreal. So they're asking potential municipal partners to join them and commit to the bullet points. So support in the creation of a toolbox that contains the various interventions for Lyme disease, identifying relevant stakeholder groups with input from that research team, sending staff to attend workshops, virtual or in person, and to represent the views of the municipality. So this work is very in line with the work that we've been doing for 5 years now on Lyme disease in terms of both the research and connecting the community. So she believes that the municipal staff time needed would be about 20 to 30 hours up until this summer, and they don't require any additional funding, although they might want to use our building for public meetings. So it would be myself that would be the representative from Modal with, if required, politicians. But at this point, they are just looking for a municipal staff liaison. So just looking for council's approval to tell them we would like to join them and commit to that request.
Excellent. I would love to be partnered. Do we have any questions? Perfect. I will ask Councillor Vino if she'd like to move that motion.
Certainly. Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that Municipal Council approve MODL join the Canadian Lyme Disease Research Network as a partner municipality, and that the Manager of Corporate Services and Communications be the municipality's staff representative. And I so move.
Seconder, Councillor Haysom. All those in favour? Councillor Greek, are you in favour?
Yes.
Councillor Staton?
Yes.
Motion passed unanimously. So now we are going to go down to 9.2.2, the Municipal Response to Dry Well, and I believe Alex is going to present here. Is he here? He is.
Yes, I apologize. For my own health and the health of my colleagues, I'm not going to appear in person today. I think you can see me, and now I'm going to attempt to share some slides, so if you just bear with me. Can you see my slides now? Oh, I can't actually hear. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, good.
And no one's responding to you.
Great, great. Off to a raring start. Here we go. So I'm just going to run through some background on this issue, which has been something that's been a topic for the municipality to consider since around 2016, look at some of the options that council has explored, and then make a recommendation to the committee for concrete actions. So just as a little bit of background, meteorological droughts are something slightly different than what we colloquially talk about in terms of dry weather. So we haven't had a lot of official droughts, but we have had periods of extended dry weather, and they've been getting more severe. Also in southwest Nova Scotia, we have a higher rate of dug or shallow wells than the rest of the province. So we're more susceptible to these periods of dry weather. Back in 2016, Department of Natural Resources did some research following a very dry summer and identified more than 1,000 homes in southwest Nova Scotia that had lost water as a result of that dry weather. And just a quick note in relation to climate change, it's expected that at least a one-third increase in these periods of dry weather will be coming our way. So council approved an issue statement to address this issue. So they want to focus on measures that reduce the impact of and increase resiliency to increased periods of dry weather on both private potable water supply and small-scale livestock and or agricultural supply. So there were four broad options that the municipality investigated. We're going to go into each of these a little bit later in the presentation. The criteria that they were evaluated against included the number of properties that could be impacted by the measure, whether or not it improves access to potable water, whether it improves domestic supply, i.e. The ability to do laundry and showers and whatnot in your house, whether it improves your ability to water gardens or take care of a small amount of livestock, whether it increases an individual's ability to be resilient, that is not have to rely on annual government assistance, what are the capital and operating costs, and how much administrative burden there are. Also, some of the options include some considerations about whether or not there'll be financial barriers or other barriers for equity-seeking groups. So to delve into each of the options, temporary relief is something that the municipality already provides by way of our coupon and shower program. So essentially, we provide coupons for people to pick up jugs of water from local grocery stores. It does provide drinking water and does address a little bit of the domestic supply in terms of providing showers at a few facilities. It has very little effectiveness, though, for being able to do that in your own home, and certainly doesn't help with things like keeping a garden watered for food production or taking care of livestock. There's very low barriers for participation, so we found ways to get coupons to people as long as they're able to get to their own grocery stores. So there's not a lot keeping people from participating if they do have a need for it. And it provides some short-term relief, but doesn't increase resiliency. It's also one of the lowest cost options. So our annual budget is currently $5,000. So even if it were to continue an increase, we wouldn't see it exceeding $10,000 in the near future. So we do see a continued need for this program, along with some annual adjustments in terms of how coupons are distributed, investigating perhaps some expanded shower locations, and reducing the notice period to get the program up and running. But we don't see it as a effective standalone option. Under bulk supply, which was another option investigated, there's actually two sources that could be used for bulk supply. One would be a connection to a municipal utility. So this would be a filling station like the one pictured here in the municipality of Yarmouth. It's capable of providing potable water both to commercial and residential users. Capital costs are somewhere in the range of $500,000. And just a quick note about this. One of the issues around 2016 was the ability for tankers to fill up at the Bridgewater Public Service utility. They have since set about a capital project of reconstructing their bulk facility, and it will be operational for the summer of 2023. So we're hopeful that that will actually take care of the hauler issue of having lineups. And we think that that will be good news in terms of if residents need to access that. The other type of source would be a community well. So this generally would be for the provision of non-potable water. So primarily for garden or small agricultural use. In discussions with the Department of Environment, who's responsible for drinking water, it was strongly recommended that no source like this be provided for potable water because of the inability to ensure that both the tap itself remains sanitized and also the containers that people were putting the water into remained sanitary. The capital cost of this type of project would be cheaper than the municipally collected connected facility. We would have to do some work to find a suitable source and location. And again, because it largely would be for non-potable sources, it's not seen as a standalone option, so it won't address your issue while on its own. Third option was water conservation. So this would be to establish a contract with a third-party provider to provide a water conservation and stormwater management program for residents. Annual costs could be in the range of $60,000 to $100,000. It does have the widest reach of all of the options in terms of being able to actually affect different households, but it's also the least effective option in terms of actually increasing potable water supply. So this could be a possible additional supplement to the programs that the council might choose to pursue, but is not recommended because of its low effectiveness. And then finally, we have water supply financing. So this would be essentially a loan program that the municipality would operate so that individuals could put infrastructure on their own homes that would increase their potable supply. So this most often is done through drilling wells, but can also be done by installing cisterns and rainwater collection systems and then treatment. It is worth noting that if we were to consider this project, staff would recommend that we don't pursue a sort of construction manager project role like we did for the LaHave project. Other municipalities that have put this project in place have been more of solely a financing arm. And we would look at a program where we help residents identify the most appropriate water infrastructure and then have them hire the contractor or through a third party hire the contractor, and then we would take care of the financing for them to make it financially viable. This has the most effective, it's the most effective option at addressing the issue statement that council has set forward, because it would address fully the private supply for potable water and domestic sources, and could then provide small agricultural assistance if needed. It's the most limited in terms of the number of households it would affect. We'd anticipate something in the order of 10 households a year participating. The annual funding, if it were 10 households, is somewhere between 100 and 200,000. Although, because it's a financing program, not a grant program, that funding is recycled through the program. And there is a high administrative burden, as managing the loans is cumbersome. Just in terms of equity consideration, application-based programs definitely benefit higher-income households as opposed to lower-income ones. And there is a financial barrier because it's not a grant, but a financing program. You do actually have to pay the full cost of the system individually, so that will eliminate some households from taking advantage of it. So in summary, the financing option gives the most effective solution, but the number of participants is limited and there is a financial barrier. And it could be cost efficient for the municipality to set up a sort of community well for small agricultural sources. But even with these options, we'd still recommend that council continue the temporary relief program for those people that aren't able to access or aren't interested in accessing the financing program, so that there is still an option for them to get potable water supply. And then we have a draft recommendation here if council's comfortable with the content, and I'd be more than happy to try and answer any questions at this time.
Do we have any questions for Alex? Councillor Haysom?
Thanks so much. Thank you, Alex, for all of this information. I'm just I'm wondering why we're going to have a motion on this now when we're about to have a workshop on it this afternoon.
The workshop is actually part of your MODL 2040 municipal land use planning project. So it's addressing how to ensure there's appropriate municipal planning strategies and land use bylaws in place around watersheds that form municipal supplies.
Okay.
So, for example, the Upper Petite is the water supply for the town of Bridgewater. So that the workshop's actually a different topic than this one.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for Alex? Mayor Bulliver-Getson?
Thank you. And the financing piece that we are looking at there is definitely something that would work. I want to go back to the infrastructure that the town of Bridgewater has just put in place. And do we know if that's going to be open to everyone? Or is that a town service?
So you have to register as a hauler in order to access that. So they don't care where the water goes. They care that you know how to use it properly so that you don't contaminate the outlet. And that you're registered so that they can bill you. So it takes care of commercial haulers. It doesn't take care of, for example, if somebody wanted to get bulk water once or twice just to get a supply to feed their livestock during a dry summer.
So there is no, there are no individual opportunities to fill bottles there?
No.
This is only a bulk water service?
Exactly.
Which is definitely something that our, even our commercial haulers in our area have been asking for.
Yes, exactly.
So it definitely will fill a void, and if the speed in which they can fill has increased, that I'm sure it has, will be much better for them because they spent a lot of time waiting. So,
yeah,
okay.
That was one of the primary upgrades was the capacity of the facility to actually fill large volume containers.
Councillor Staton, go ahead.
A quick question for Alex, if I might. Do you see a plan being in place for this summer dry season?
So that's a great question. So I would anticipate that we would continue with the coupon program. It's also possible, depending on the how long it takes to develop the bylaw, that we could have the financing program in place. I don't see us having a community well in place because that would require identifying an appropriate water source and then having to do the design and construction. I don't think that that fits in our capital plans for this year, and it's normally not how we would proceed with a capital project.
Councillor Greek, go ahead.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This is something when I was campaigning, I heard on numerous doors. It was a very dry summer that year when we were campaigning. And thank you for bringing this forward. I look forward to moving forward with having something in place. And I just wanted to say how much I heard this, that it's an issue, a concern for livestock, for gardens, for people.
Okay, do we have any other questions or comments for Alex? All right, then I will ask Deputy Moore, Councillor Moore, if she'd be prepared to move that. Gee.
To the Chair and members of the Policy Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy Strategy Committee direct staff to develop a draft private water supply improvement and financing program for the committee to review, and further that the committee direct staff to explore possible sites and costs for a non-potable community supply source. And I so move.
Do we have a seconder? Councillor Vino? All those in favor? Councillor Staton?
Yeah, I'm having trouble with my hand. Yes.
I saw that. Councillor Greek?
Yes.
Great. Motion passed unanimously. So I find I'm always apologizing for bouncing back and forth on this. I believe we do have time to put 9.1.1, the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy, Shoback Wetland, Carbon Project, and Carbon Offset Credit System. Abby?
Morning, everyone. Joanne, if you could share my screen. Do you want me to connect with? I just plugged in the HDMI.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Okay. Hope everybody can see the screen. So the project is proposed by Kingsburg Coastal Conservancies to develop a toolkit for wetlands in Schoberg lands, and I will also touch upon how this project can lead towards also providing opportunities to the municipality to assess benefits from this carbon tax and GHG offset credit system. To begin with, even before I speak about the project itself and what these carbon and the GHG offset credit system is, I think it would be a good idea to provide a little bit of background to help us better understand where all of this is coming from. And then I will speak about the project itself and the benefits that we could have from this project. And then I will, in the end, speak about the carbon tax and the GHG offset credit system. So to begin with the background, as we all know, MODL, it declared a climate emergency back in 2019 and developed a 10-year local climate change action plan 2030. In short, we call it as LCAP 2030. And as part of the plan, we developed several emission reduction targets, and including our community emission reduction targets to reduce our emissions by 30% below 2019 baseline emissions level by the end of this decade, and 65% below 2019 levels by the end of 2040, and to achieve net zero carbon emissions by mid-century. Further, as part of the local climate change action plan, there are also 27 different climate actions that the task has been assigned to the staff to work upon implementing this plan. And a few of the targets of these respective action items include: one is to purchase and or accept land donations, as well as to assess other mechanisms such as conservation easements to protect and or conserve up to 20% of the identified land and water mass in the municipality by 2030, and to also support research and technological innovations to address climate change. To summarize, as the staff has been given a task to help municipality conserve and protect land mass, land and water mass for up to 20% of the total municipalities, staff began in working on this task, and the step one was to obviously understand what our natural assets do we have in the municipality in the first place. So back in 2020, MODL hired Municipal Natural Assets Initiative, MNAI, to develop a natural asset inventory in the municipality. So the idea is, even before we start understanding what to protect and conserve, first of all, let's understand what natural assets do we have in the municipality. So we received a final report back from them in 2021, and table 2 below that is taken from that final report summarizes what kind of natural assets do we have in the municipality by assets by type. For example, agriculture, how much of the land do we have, beaches, cliffs, coastal dunes, forest, grasslands, and so on, and including wetlands. Now, this project, because it specifically is about wetlands, so I'll speak about wetlands. So in our municipality, we have over 4,000 wetlands. And now that we know we have so many wetlands, now the question is, how do we know which one to protect and conserve, or how do we know which one is more valuable than other? Because it's not really practically feasible to go ahead and buy all of those wetlands. That would be millions of dollars and to begin with. And even if it's not just about the money itself, it also comes to the right land use planning. Without knowing the characteristics of those areas, we won't really be imposed regulatory tools or be able to effectively manage land use developments of those wetlands. So to begin with assessment of these wetlands, last year MODL also collaborated with the Ducks Unlimited Canada to assess 5 of those more than 4,000 wetlands to understand, start assessing these wetlands and put value to these wetlands to better be able to understand which ones to protect and conserve and which one we can let go. So wetlands, as we all know, these are vital natural assets that provide several ecosystem services to us, which include improving water quality, helping us control floods and recharge our groundwater, help us protect our coastal infrastructure and provide critical habitat to for rare and endangered species. So as part of our work with the Duck Simulator Unlimited, we picked up, we selected five wetlands through our municipality, which included one in New Germany, one in Rose Bay, one in Stellar Brooks, one in Coast Crossroad, and one another one. So what they did was they did what is called as Wetland Ecosystem Services Protocol Assessment. So it is kind of a quick tool that can be used to assess these wetlands and assign scores to these wetlands. So what it means is the five wetlands that they assess, they are going to assess assign scores, which they call as functional scores. Higher a score and higher benefits scores that will be assigned to a wetland, which means would mean it is more valuable and will dictate where municipality should put their money towards or like focus on protecting and conserving. And lower the score will mean that a wetland is not really worth protecting and conserving. But there are also, again, strengths and weaknesses of using these quick assessment tools, as these are mostly subjective and can lead to biasness in results. So these are not really effective when it comes to help decision makers or land use planners or government controllers to make decisions based on the results of these assessments. So, and also it is also very costly and intensive to use all of these resources to assess, because we have now over 4,000 wetlands, and that would be really costly to using these tools to assess all of them. So what do we do now? So as staff still has was exploring other avenues to assess these wetlands, it was at that time that another wonderful project came to us on our table. There was the project that was proposed by KCC's Schauberg Wetlands Carbon Project. Now, to give you an overview of the project itself, what KCC intends to do is it has proposed our municipal council. It proposed in December last year at its finance committee that it would like to partner with our municipality on a project that will assess and enhance the carbon sequestration capacity of wetlands within those Schauberg lands. And to further, they will also work towards developing a tangible toolkit that will allow our municipality to assess and enhance the carbon sequestration capacity of other wetlands within its jurisdiction. So in simple way, what it intends to do is it is going to assess how much carbon, what is the baseline emission levels that has been of that wetlands, how much baseline carbon storage capacity of their wetland is, and will also enhance in what ways they can enhance its carbon sequestration capacity within those Schauberg lands. And further to that, it will develop a toolkit, assessment toolkit, that will be that we can use to assess other wetlands, not only within our jurisdiction, but also can be helpful for other municipalities across the province and across Canada-wide to use it. So besides providing several ecosystem services, wetlands are also by far one of the largest carbon sinks on our planet, much more than actually even forest or agricultural land or grasslands. And wetlands are often drained to improve human utility, but which also leads to loss of these natural assets and also release of carbon stored in them to the atmosphere. So which makes it very crucial as we fight against climate change and aim towards reducing our carbon footprint and protecting these wetlands. This can be one of the necessary solutions that we need to mitigate and adapt to the changing climate. And the proposed project by KCC aligns with our goals and targets of our local climate change action plan and will help us determining ways how we can not only measure carbon storage capacity of these wetlands and how we can further enhance their performance as carbon sinks and how we can enable value-based prioritization of these wetlands for protection and conservation. So to give you an overview, this project map that shows the lands that are in the Schauberg land, which also shows what land was co-owned by MODL and KCC, what has been individually owned by KCC, and also drawn by manually by pen to highlight wetlands in those areas. And I think the following map will probably make it a little bit clearer. The wetlands in those and those lands that the MOD, KCC will be trying to assess within those lands. In regard to project deliverables, the project intends to, first of all, collaborate with the Acadia Band, First Nations, municipality itself, and the post-secondary institution resources, which is Dalhousie University. And it intends to provide a comprehensive research report on the wetlands and its biological carbon sequestration capacity. Then it will also provide a drone technological map of these areas' wetlands, will perform a field assessment report to quantify and characterize these wetlands, and will provide a preliminary report on what the findings were. And further to that, it will provide specific recommendations to MODL for protection and potential enhancement and restoration of these existing wetlands, and how these wetlands could be assessed using these. So they are also going to develop this toolkit that can be useful in assessing not only the specific wetland, but also the other wetlands within the jurisdiction. Further, it will also include a public engagement campaign and will provide a final report. So in terms of benefits that a municipality can get by working on this project, it is, first of all, a huge opportunity to advance research into protecting and conserving one of our biggest natural things that we have in the municipality. Second is to opportunity to support our local community champions who are passionate and who are acting on this climate change. Will further reduce our carbon footprint and move towards meeting our set emission reduction targets as part of our local climate change action plan. This is also provides an opportunity to partner with the Acadia First Nation community and build healthy working relationships with them. And it also provides an opportunity to do this project at a subsidized cost, because much of the project cost will be borne by the province. So I will also speak in my following slide, when I'll speak on the financial things, that how much is being funded by the province and how much contribution will be done by the municipality. This project also provides an opportunity to foster the wetlands ecosystem that will help us to enhance its functional values and services, which would include improving water quality, controlling floods, stabilize the soil, and recharging groundwater, and providing critical habitat for rare and endangered species. It further generates shareable knowledge and assessment toolkit that will support replication of the project in other communities and jurisdictions in the province and nationwide. And further, because this kit will be municipally owned, that itself provides a cost-effective way to assess and prioritize these wetlands in the municipality for protection and conservation, and will allow the municipality to move towards achieving its target to protect and conserve up to 20% of the identified land and water mass in the municipality by the end of this decade. In terms of project timeline, it will be delivered over 2 years and in five phases. Phase one will be to, first of all, identify and map these wetlands within those Schoberg lands. Second will be to research and document whatever the carbon sequestration capacity of these wetlands are, and how research measures to potentially increase its capacity. Phase three will be to develop a carbon storage capacity plan, including gathering indigenous ecological knowledge from Acadia First Nation communities, and to also contract professional services to provide aerial and field mapping of the Schoberg and perform field wetland assessments and inventory. Phase four will include where they will measure and evaluate the results and provide recommendations to MODL and KCC Land Stewardship Program and ecosystem values with indigenous traditional ecological knowledge. So outcome of the project will be to develop an assessment toolkit that will help us to better assess these wetlands and other wetlands in the municipality. Phase five and the concluding phase will include conduct a meaningful public engagement campaign to raise awareness, gather and present community responses, and encourage local communities to support and implement the proposed measures. In regard to project management team, it includes principal collaborators will be the municipality itself, Acadia First Nations, which includes Scott Jeremy, the First Nations Ecological Manager, and then it would also be Dalhousie's Assistant Professor Andrew Medeiros, I also had the opportunity to study under that professor. So he's a very well-regarded professor who is expert in this field of study. Overall project guidance will be provided by KCC's board of directors, which they will work with the project coordinator, Sarah, and they will also work with the designated MODL staff and First Nations Acadia Band Ecological Manager, Scott Jeremy. And day-to-day project management will be led by Sarah, KCC Board Chair Janet Peace, and the Science and Research Lead. Budget will be led by Allison Treeman. In regards to project human resources, includes First Nations Acadia Band Culture Advisor Scott Jeremy, Dalhousie Summer Student for the ground truthing, Professor Andrew for the wetlands research, and the Showback Committee members, Marilyn for land acquisitions, ground truthing, and community outreach, and Allison will be taking lead on science and stewardship. Further, special project advisors and contractor resources, which include Strum consultants. They will be performing LIDAR wetlands mapping and help in carbon capture measurements, ground truthing, and community outreach. All the bios and CVs of these members have been added to the report itself. In regard to the project budget and funding sources, the total project cost is estimated to be somewhere around $382,000, out of which it is expected 70% will be funded by the province, so which provides us an opportunity to get benefits of this project at a much subsidized cost. So they are applying to the Sustainable Community Challenge Fund, which is administered by NSFM, which will cover the cost of up to $267,000. Maybe I should have zoomed in a bit. You can see the numbers? Okay. And it is expected that our contribution will be close to 15.7, rounded off to 16%, and the remaining contribution will be from KCC, NSCC, and Dalhousie's grants. And Municipal Council's motion will be contingent upon approval of this funding by SECF funding. So what it means is if the province rejects this project, we also won't be funding the project. And if the province supports this project and provides 70% of the funding of the project, then we will also support by providing 16% of the total project cost. It is not contingent upon the NSCC's or Dalhousie's grant. KCC will be responsible to make up for that in case they don't get approval for those grants. And KCC is pretty confident they will be able to raise equivalent amount of funds. So to summarize, the project provides a valuable opportunity for a municipality that will provide an avenue to develop a cost-effective assessment toolkit, which will provide a way to for municipality and its staff to assess these wetlands in a cost-effective manner and assign values to these wetlands to better understand which ones to protect and how to protect these wetlands. So now coming, although this is not a direct outcome of the project, before I even start to explain about the carbon tax and GHG offset credit systems, the project deliverables is limited to only helping us develop this toolkit. But however, staff foresees that the opportunities doesn't end there, and it will further open doors for us to get benefits from GHG offset credit systems as well. So what it is so back in 2016, first of all, let's talk about carbon tax itself, because it is different from the GHG offset credit systems. So what carbon tax and cap and trade system is, in 2016, federal government announced a pan-Canadian framework to enact towards climate change that would require all the provinces and territories of Canada to adopt a carbon system by 2019. That could include either they can choose to have a cap and trade system, or they can choose to have a carbon tax system, or they can choose to have a combination of both. So what a carbon tax is, it directly institutes a price on GHG emissions. So the emitters are charged a certain price for every ton of emissions that they produce. And as opposed to this, a cap and trade system is, it caps the total amount of GHG emissions that are allowed by the emitters. In simple language, what it does is, for example, an oil and gas company, and it produces GHG emissions through production and distribution of oil. So as part of their process, they emit certain amount of GHG emissions. So every ton they emit, a carbon tax would mean, depending on what the rate is, presently the rate is $65 per ton. So they will be paying that $65 per ton tax. So, for example, if they emit 1,000 tons of emissions, they will be paying 65,000 tons as tax to the government. A cap and trade system, on the other hand, what it would do is it will limit the cap, how much emissions the oil and gas company is allowed to emit per year. So, for example, the government can set a cap that you are only allowed to emit 5,000 or 500 tons of emissions. And so if the company emits more than that set limit, they will have to either pay penalty or they can choose to trade their carbon offsets with other eligible company. I'll speak more to this in my following slides, so for better understanding. So the federal system requires there are certain standards that the province and the territories have to follow strictly, otherwise the federal systems will take over. What it requires is the provinces and territories, for example, for the cap and trade system, their emissions have to at least reduce 30% below 2005 emission levels by the end of this decade. And further to that, it has to ensure that the caps are consistently declining to meet at least 2022's corresponding emissions, what it would have been in case the carbon price was implemented. In simple language, if the province choose to go ahead and have a cap and trade system, first of all, they have to ensure that by the end of 2030, their emission levels reduce by the national or Canada's 2005 levels by 30%. And secondly, they have to ensure that by 2022, whatever emissions, projected emissions would be, it has to be equivalent of emissions what would have been if the carbon price system was implemented. For carbon price or like carbon tax system, the requirement is that it should start at least $10 per metric ton of carbon emissions in 2018. And following to that, it will consistently increase by $15, which will increase up to $175 by the end of this decade. So if you look at across Canada, what the carbon pricing systems have been implemented federally and the provincially. So federal system takes over if the province or territories does not meet the minimum set standard by the federal government. And different provinces have different systems implemented. For example, the British Columbia have their own provincial carbon tax system, and they are allowed to keep that because they meet the minimum standards that has been set by the federal government. Some provinces do not meet those standards. So what happens there is the federal system takes over. Now, for example, in Alberta or Saskatchewan, if you would see, the federal backstop applies. Federal backstop essentially means, let's say, if the Alberta has a cap and trade system, but they are not really meeting the standards of carbon pricing, so the federal carbon pricing system will also implement in those provinces. It is also going to happen the same in the Nova Scotia as well, starting this year. So Nova Scotia, since 2019, had a cap and trade system, which appears to be does not meeting the minimum standards that was set by the federal government. So federal government has decided to implement the carbon tax in the province starting this year. So what it is going to do is, so actually before I speak on the impacts of the carbon tax, maybe I can quickly speak on what the Nova Scotia's cap and trade system was. So what it used to do was it would set a cap on how much emissions that a company or emitter could produce. So it had shortlisted a mandatory 27 companies that were supposed to be part of this program. For example, Irving Oil Company or Nova Scotia Power and so on. And they were given a set limit on that were the emissions that they could produce annually. If they would fail to do so, either they can choose to purchase carbon credits to other companies who did not use their allowances. And if they don't get the allowances, they will have to pay penalties, which will be much higher than trading the carbon credits within this system. So let's say there are two companies, A and B, and A did not use maybe 10% of their cap, and on the other side, B company excessively produced 10% excessive emissions than they were allowed to produce within their cap. So they can trade these credits from A and B. They can buy those credits. And these credits are not, they are, so the province acts as a mediator, which auctions these allowances to both the companies or all the companies within this system. So they don't trade directly, they trade through the province. So in simple language, what happens is the allowances that are given to these companies are traded in form of auctions, and whatever the money that the province generates is given back to the people in form of grants, or they invest into other sustainable programs. So for example, in 2021, all the money that the province has accumulated through this cap and trade system was invested in affordable housing retrofits, clean energy training, electric vehicle chargers, and so on. And it also includes the Sustainable Community Challenges Fund for the very same program for which this project is applying towards, and also as a municipality, we are applying towards for our solar project. So in last year, they gathered $43 million through this system. Now, because this does not really meet the stringent standards that has been set by the federal government, now the federal government's carbon tax will take over. So starting this year, from July 2023 onwards, so it will start at a rate of $65 per ton in 2023, which will continue to increase by $1.15 per year until it reaches $170 per ton in 2030. What it essentially means is it is going to increase the gas prices by 14 cents or so starting July, and it will also increase the prices of home heating oil by 15 cents. But so what the government is trying to do is it is primarily trying to instigate behavior change in people so that they move away from fossil fuels and try to make sustainable choices. But the federal carbon tax system is a revenue neutral system. So what it means is whatever tax the government is going to collect by imposing this tax, it will be sent back to that respective province. And 90% of that money will go directly to the households, and the remaining 10% will be given to the province, which they can use it towards other projects, clean energy projects. And it is expected that by implementing carbon tax in Nova Scotia, it will generate up to $1 billion in form of carbon tax revenue, out of which 90% will be given back to the households and 10% will go back to the province, which will come back in the form of carbon, like clean energy project grants or funding. So I'll give you one example. Maybe that will help you all better get a sense what the government is trying to do. Let's say there are two random people, Alex or Albert, and government wants to reduce plastic pollution in the province. So what it does is it puts a tax on the plastic bags, and it says it is going to charge 5 cents every time you will buy a new plastic bag. And on the other side, the market also has an alternative sustainable solution, which is a reusable bag, which comes at $1. So what Alex does is, Alex goes ahead and buy that reusable bag for $1, but Albert doesn't do that. Albert wants to continue paying 5 cents, buying that plastic bag again and again. After 1 year, what happens is, let's say Albert used hundreds of plastic bags, and all the revenue that will be generated from his tax, which is equivalent to 100 times 5 cents, $5, will go to the government. And because this is a revenue neutral system, so government is going to bring all that money back to Albert and Alex. Meaning $5 that was paid by primarily by Albert will be distributed back half and half to both Alex and Albert. So $2.05 cents or 50 cents to Alex, $2.50 to Albert. If you look closely, what they are trying to do is they are trying to instigate behavior change in people. So Alex, not only he has got back his $1 by using reusable bag, further to that, he has also made a profit of $1.50, like savings, by choosing a sustainable alternative solutions. And in this scenario, it is the Albert who is essentially paying all that $2.50 to Alex. The idea is the same. So government is going to put up a tax on the fossil fuels, which will include coal-fired electricity. So Nova Scotia Power is going to increase their prices, gasoline, diesel, heating oil, etc. And people will suffer more who continue to choose to dependent on fossil fuels. Their suffering is going to be more, and it will continue to increase from here onwards. On the other side, it becomes imperative that our government also provide support to help people transition to clean energy and alternate solutions, so to get some relief and move or get benefits from savings and from these high-rising prices. As form of the revenue that will be sent back to these households, what government is going to start doing is it will start providing rebates, which will be called as Climate Action Incentive Payments, or CAIP in short. So it will be paid quarterly to all Nova Scotians starting this summer. So it will provide into the amounts of $4.96 for all individuals. The amount is going to be dependent. You will all get to know when you will be filing your taxes probably this year, what amount exactly you will be getting. $2.48 if you have a spouse, a common law partner, $124 per child under 18, and a total of roughly $992 for a family of four. There is also a rural supplement if you are living outside Halifax metropolitan area, so you'll get 10% extra. And presently, the provinces that receive CAIP payments are Alberta, Ontario, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan. And starting summer of this year, it will also be given to Nova Scotians, PEI, and Newfoundland, Labrador. So now that we know what the carbon tax is, now we move on to what GHG offset credit system is. So these two are different things. So carbon taxes, they put tax on the pollution, and credit system is they provide an opportunity to hold everyone who reduces the carbon emissions from the atmosphere. They earn a credit which can be sold to the interested buyers. So what the federal government has done is they came up with Canadian Greenhouse Offset Credit System regulations last year, in last summer, and that what they primarily has done is they have established a nationwide national standards or protocols how proponents who are doing these carbon offset projects can earn credits, and they can sell off these credits at this market. So its system, it enables project proponents to generate federal offset credits, and if they register and implement projects that reduce GHGs using published federal GHG offset protocols. So government has set several protocols for different projects. If you abide by them and follow those standards, you can register your projects in this system, and you can sell and make money out of it. So offset credits can be sold and used for compliance by facilities covered in the federal output-based pricing system, which is cap and trade, or sold and used by others who are looking to meet voluntary climate targets or commitments. And it is expected that the private sector individuals and organizations such as brokerage services and carbon exchanges may facilitate the trading of these offset carbon credits in this market. This is a quote from the government website itself, that the relevant links may be available on the federal GHG offset credit system website as they are developed, and the financial value of these offset credits will be determined by the supply and demand in the market. So many countries throughout the world has been implementing these systems, and Canada being one of the few ones who has come online pretty lately, but still they are doing much better job. Instead of having a voluntary market, they are establishing a nationwide standard system so that there is more compliance and people really benefit from them in the long term. So how it essentially works is that the government is going to set us certain protocols that have to be followed if you want your project to be registered for these offset credit system. Last year, they published protocols for landfill methane recovery and destruction system. We, as a staff, we explore opportunities if we have any in our Meadow landfill site. If we already had a methane recovery system, we could have worked towards registering our project, but we didn't have any methane recovery system at our landfill site. Presently, the Department of Environment and Climate Change Canada is currently developing other protocols, so which includes emissions from refrigeration systems, improving forest management on private lands. That would mean woodlot owners in our municipality and so on. Enhanced soil organic carbon, which includes wetlands, livestock feed management, and direct air carbon dioxide capture and sequestration. And as other protocols are completed and work on new protocols will begin, and subsequent project types under considerations are bioenergy, carbon dioxide capture and sequestration, improved forest management on public lands, which will be either it could be municipal, provincial, or federal, and livestock manure management and anaerobic digestion. So how it works is they have established this credit and tracking system. In short, they call it CATS. You can register your projects by creating an account on this federal website and follow the guidelines, and you can generate credits. They have like compliance officers who are going to check if your project meets those protocols. If they do, they will give you credits depending on how much tons of carbon emissions your projects absorb or sequesters. And then you can trade your offset credits in these markets. So this still is in a development and infancy stage. They have so far only come with one protocols, but staff foresees that municipalities should continue its research efforts and be prepared as the markets are developing. We should be too with time. And overall, to summarize, coming back to the project itself, staff strongly feels that the project that has been proposed by KCC to develop this assessment toolkit for MODL will be very beneficial in having a cost-effective avenue to assess our wetlands and prioritize them for protection and conservation and also for land use development. Further, this project may also provide opportunities to assess federal GHG offset credit system, depending on when the federal government comes up with their soil organic carbon protocols. So should the municipal council choose to support the project, the recommended motion is as follows. Now, I think that should be from my side.
Okay, Councillor Moore.
Well, I asked for more information because I wasn't quite sure what I was voting on the last time, and thank you. It was like, wow, I think I know more about carbon tax than some people do right now. But thank you, Abby. I appreciate it, and I learned a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. Mayor Bellberg-Getson.
Thank you. I just want to go back to the funding slide, and it was in relation to everything right there. So if the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund money doesn't come through, does that end the project?
I think it would.
That 70%
is a huge chunk. The project is definitely very valuable. So if the project gets rejected from the province, it will definitely open for discussions. So either KCC will have to come back to the council again with a new proposal if they would want to continue with the project, and that would mean also different financial projections. That would mean different sources, and the ask from the council could also be different. So it depends if the project will stop completely or if they continue their efforts finding other avenues, how they can carry it forward, but definitely it will substantially change how it looks like now, like the budget, and how it will look at that point.
So I guess I'm going there because this is a, I believe, $6.5 million fund, And I believe the decision for this is not going to be made till out in April.
Yeah. So they right now this year they have over 15 million, but they are highly oversubscribed.
Yes.
The chances of getting this approved, we don't really know, and the results will be out sometime in the month of April.
And we also have an ask into this fund too.
Yes.
For another project.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Councillor Bell?
Also, to quickly note, there are also two different streams for these funds. One is climate change mitigation stream, and one is climate change adaptation stream. This project falls under adaptation stream, and our ones is gone under mitigation stream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Abby, I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge with us. And, well, Alex and Albert have quite a shell game going on. While they're moving the shells back and forth, a whole lot of bureaucrats in Ottawa will be collecting some nice salaries. Now, if I were to try to sell this 30-minute explanation on the GHG and the CAT system on any of the doorsteps of my constituents, they'd slam the door in my face. Okay, I just have to put it in perspective of how I'm coming forward here. Now, when I read that wetlands are important carbon sinks where gigatons of carbon are stored in their sediments, it appears much is still unknown. This is sort of a greenwashing concept, I've been told by some of my constituents. This is a topic that puts me and my constituents between a bog and a hard spot. Many articles state that freshwater wetlands are important to carbon sinks when left undistributed or undisturbed. Look at another study about managing the grazing of your cattle and the intensity it has, and fencing to exclude livestock from freshwater wetlands is one approach used to reduce grazer impacts. You already have studies in the United Kingdom, Gulf of Mexico, Australia, New Jersey, along the Yangtze River, France, just to name a few. I try to do a fair amount of research to educate myself in this. So the concept that I have may be closely aligned with yours, but at the end of the day, I have to respect the thoughts of my constituents. Now, you can bet that these studies will spend millions of dollars, not the pennies that KCC will spend with the province of Nova Scotia. The 70% that might be approved to our 16% would fund a project. The Nova Scotia government have already demonstrated their lack of knowledge of carbon capture when they permitted hundreds of mature trees being cut down in the protected MODL trail constructed along Highway 103. The current Nova Scotia government has opted for a provincial system and chose not to accept the federal backup system. After the MODL Finance Committee of December 6, I felt a little bit uncomfortable with a second funding request from the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy after we had just provided a very generous grant to them. While I realize that it is a separate project and different from land purchase, at the end of the day, I need to be able to explain this to my constituents and how we could spend over $400,000 in just a short period of time, especially after telling constituents I could not support their cause of purchasing additional lands on the riverbanks of the Lehigh River in Pleasantville for green space. And a number of people had contacted me with available land, and I more or less told them, no, we've spent what we're going to spend on land purchases, and in a polite way, brushed them off for the time being, even though that's a very real concern for those people in that area. I might add, it was pointed out to me that the minutes published on our website does not give the dollar figure in the minutes. I was asked how $360,000 expenditure could be overlooked in the name of transparency. So maybe we can go and correct our minutes as they approve. Not correct them, but add a footnote, just so that we are publicly saying how much we did spend. So in the days after December 6th, I randomly contacted 26 households in District 2, asking their view of contributing an additional $60,000 on a biodiversity project. Of the 26 that were contacted, 10 replies were returned to me by email. As of that time, I did receive one additional, but I've left it out of my report because I had it already wrote up at that time, of which 3 were in favor of the project. 1 indicated to me they were undecided because they thought it was a complex decision and they lacked the sufficient information to make the decision. I told them I was basically in the same shoes, okay? So that's why I tried to educate myself. 6 indicated that they were not in favor. 2 individuals contacted me by phone, and as their comments were more direct and their advice was a mistakenly no, I will not share with you their comments because I felt they were rather rude. So I'll just summarize this by giving you 10 comments that came back. Yes, I would like to compliment MODL for working with the KCC in acquiring 54 acres of land in the Shedderback. I also commend the council for maintaining a 51% ownership of the new deed. As the population of Nova Scotia continues to grow, pressure will naturally grow to develop lands for housing, and due to the importance of wetlands for ecological reasons, it makes more sense to protect the land while it is still relatively easy to do so. I'm sharing both positive and negative comments. Yes, providing initial funding for a long-term project or initiative sort of means that you believe in the initiative and will support KCC in the long term. Write out the check and be prepared for additional requests of the MODL's easy money. Would rather see the money used for other worthy projects as well. My socioeconomic status does not allow me to live in Kingsburg with the millionaires. There are so many needs to deal with, such as climate change. So a good balance is important. This one I took as undecided or possibly leaning towards yes. Did you folks think of investing in the Laconia Solar Farm, which is also a sustainable project? Too much to think about. I don't care what makes people happy. I just want to be able to buy groceries this week. No, I think, well, what KCC has achieved. I believe that the money might be better spent on other efforts to reach net zero goal, like your recent purchases of electric vehicles for your staff members. Come on, Bell. It's a great project, don't get me wrong. But are they looking for taxpayers to fund the project? MODL should set a limit on this project based on their overall costs to be completed. there is lots of land away from the coast that could be purchased, more land area for the buck. So, no more funds for Kingsburg wetlands. Use the money to improve, recycle, reuse. Anyway, shouldn't the carbon tax money be used for this? The next one. While we wholeheartedly support defending the planet's biodiversity and slowing down the effects of the climate change, there are many other areas of the municipality that need to be protected. For example, 332 Upper LaHave, which is in Councillor Wynot's area, assessed for $24,000, $24,800 across the river from our home, is a large tract of 1,008 acres of privately owned mature woodland where we see ospreys and eagles. If not protected, that land will probably or likely be level for development someday. Maybe the municipality should be buying that. 9, we feel best voting no for the future expansion of money to the Kingsburg Coastal Conservatory Shutterback Wetlands Carbon Project. Take a look at their website. The district has already paid for more than half of the land they purchased. We feel this is enough money going for one project. And the last one, although in many countries it has been adopted that we are in a climate emergency, we stand unconvinced. There are many well-done long-term studies finished by many people with good credentials that say otherwise. Has your council addressed public transit? Has your council addressed housing in the municipality? Or are you going to continue investing in the swamps? Now, I'm only sharing the words with feedback that I asked for. It might not have been the feedback that I necessarily wanted to get, but I do feel that I have been elected to represent this group of people who did respond to me. Unfortunately, more people did not respond, but that's just the way questionnaires go. Of the $382,000 project, KCC are planning to spend less than $20,000 of their own monies, which have not yet been raised or may be financed through donations in kind. So I have to keep that in the back of my mind. Now, in my own words, while I do not necessarily think that this project is wrong, I do believe there are other more applicable projects to which we could better apply our assets. So at the request of my constituents, the highest percent that I heard from, I will vote no on this matter. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Councillor Satin?
Thank you. I have several comments and as well a couple questions, but thank you, Abby, for the excellent presentation. And when we say $30,000 this year and $30,000 next year, is it capped at $30,000? Well, when you look at the 60%, I'm concerned that if they don't get the funding from the other partners, they will come back for more from MODL. And that really concerns me because there's no guarantee that it will be the 31 year and the next year. We bought the land in order to protect the environment and the atmosphere, and now they're saying, well, maybe somewhere down the line we'll sell the carbon credits so a bigger entity who pollutes the atmosphere can buy our credits and we'll get some money back, which to me doesn't help the atmosphere. It may help a larger company, but it certainly doesn't help the atmosphere. And that's what we're trying to protect. Now, as Martin mentioned, along Highway 103, the province allowed some very good green trees to be cut so a business could erect a sign. Now, I reached out to both my municipal counterparts, my provincial counterparts, and did not receive an answer from either one, but yet DOT gave permission to cut those trees and haul them away for no obvious reason other than to erect a sign. So I'm really concerned with the path that MODL is taking with spending the taxpayers' money, and I will not be supporting this because I think this is just the tip of the iceberg as far as KCC is concerned, coming back requesting more from MODL. So my answer will be no when a vote is taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Staton. Councillor Haysom?
Thank you very much, and thank you, Abby, for the presentation. I just want to highlight something. Everything that we've discussed and that's been on the agenda so far today has been related to climate change. So if you think about finding locations for EV chargers, whether they be in parking lots owned by religious institutions or what have you, addressing the increase of Lyme disease, that is definitely related to climate as it gets warmer here, and we are seeing, you know, those ticks don't die through the winter because we're just not having a cold winter anymore. Changing weather patterns that result in wells going dry, these are all related to climate change. And as a council, we have made a commitment, we have made it a strategic priority to try and address this issue. And it is a huge issue, and it is complicated, and it is complex, and no one single thing is going to do it. It has to be a multifaceted approach. I think we all know this. I see this as an opportunity for partnership, not only with the KCC, but with other well-respected institutions and groups. There are some big names and people attached to this project, and they aren't just the KCC, and it's not just MODL. We're talking about Dalhousie. We're talking about First Nations groups that we need to forge relationships with in this area. And this is an opportunity for us to meet our own goals around sustainability and climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. And it is a relatively small ask. And I think that I understand the concern that there will be more asks forthcoming, and we have made a significant contribution up until this point. But I think that we can make that commitment of $30,000 a year over 2 years. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that this ask requires very little capacity from MODL staff. It is predominantly being done by other groups and other players and other contributors. And that's something that we have had to consider quite a lot with all of the different asks that are made of this council. I think that the impacts could be huge and could be translated to many other municipalities and other parts of the province and also across the country, and we can really be part of that leading edge. So I'd like to highlight also that we've already invested in this project, and this is already an asset of the municipality. We are 51% owners in this piece of property, and we can let it sit there, and that's fine, or we can invest in it to show how valuable it is so that when other opportunities come up, not just for us but for other people, they are motivated to take that action because we have quantified. It's easy to say, oh, it's greenwashing that wetlands will sequester carbon, but if you have the scientific evidence to back it up, then it's information that is useful across the board. So this is already one of our assets. It's something that staff supports, and they've been really clear and have put a lot of effort into this presentation and have been upfront to say that we support this, that it has benefit to the municipality. And I really feel that this aligns with our goals and our objectives and our commitments that we have made publicly. We have said we are working to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. We are working to address climate change. We have declared an emergency. We need to engage the public and the community, and this is a way to do so. I will definitely be voting in support of this. Thank you.
Councillor Oikel?
I just want to thank you so much for this work and for bringing it the value of wetlands, because I would not have known. I would not have looked into it, and I want to let you know that I did take a lot of time this weekend and other times in looking into the presentation and looking online. In fact, when I went to the movies last night, the Government of Canada had a public awareness ad on the value of wetlands just before the movie started. So kind of reinforced it all. I don't feel that the project is necessary for gathering data because it is a science, it's known. It's a known fact that wetlands help with the absorption of carbon. There is an unlimited amount of studies already done. Councillor Bell has mentioned some of them, and since I went back as far as 2011 and read reports and assessments, and I watched videos and webinars on YouTube covering it all. And there are governments through Canada, the United States, and British, and all the other places that Councillor Bell mentioned, to protect and to encourage others who own property with wetlands on them. We do not need to spend $60,000 on our wetlands to do that. The information is already out there. We just need to gather it and use it to help do that awareness campaign. And we can still have those partnerships with the Acadia First Nations. As far as the carbon credits, to know the amount of the carbon, you do need to have a baseline, and that's what this project plans to do. And then the second year, I'm assuming they'll take another core example and decide how much carbon has been absorbed between the two samples, and that will let you know how much carbon credits you have for that year. But then you're going to have to do it every other year in order to continue to do that, to know, which again is more money coming out. My biggest problem is selling the carbon credits. We are basically saying to another organization or industry that you continue putting carbon in the air because we're going to sell you our credits because we want the money. And I can't support that. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Councillor Rickel. Mayor Bellavergetson.
Thank you. And I did want to thank Abby for the presentation. It definitely was informative. Carbon credits have been out there for a long time now as far as the information available, as the previous speakers have indicated. I did want to make Council aware that I did receive 20 emails, and I am not about to read each one of them in support of this since Thursday in relation to this motion that's on the books. There also, I believe, when I read the motion, furthermore, release of the funding is conditional upon the Kingsburg Coastal. It says conditioned in there. But when we look at this, there's pros and cons on both sides. There is no right, wrong. We've invested a lot of money into sustainability. Is this where we want to go? I think that we will be here, whether we go today or tomorrow or in a year's time. We definitely are going to be doing this. And I think that it'll depend on whichever level of government puts more emphasis on it as it moves forward. But sustainability is alive. It's something that we are cognitive of. When we look at our electric vehicle fleet, yeah, there's people out there that don't support us buying electric vehicles. There's people out there that don't think we should be doing anything at all in relation to the environment and that our money can be spent other places. But if we're going to be proactive, I think that we do need to look at the way forward in the future of where we're going here. This is conditional on them receiving the grant. And I guess I will be supporting the motion, but I will not support a re-ask if it is not approved. And I'm going to make that point known right from the start. I think that the $30,000 a year is a good investment. It goes back to our community initiative as well and where we want to be with meeting our targets. And one way or the other, we have committed to meeting targets. And we can't forget that part. So I think that this is one way to move forward to a step towards that direction. I guess I'll leave it at that for now. But again, there's always going to be people opposed to whatever decision we make. I hear it all the time.
Thank you. I'd like to weigh in. Just, I know we're behind schedule here, but I'd like to weigh in a little bit. I echo the comments of Councillor Bell and Councillor Oikel. I understand the interest in establishing markets for carbon credits. I just completely disagree with the concept. Wetlands have always been here, and whether we knew it or not, they were always absorbing carbons. Are carbon credits a scheme to generate income? Is it a get-out-of-jail-free card for a large corporation that failed to reduce their emissions? There's a term for this, and I'll echo Councillor Bell again. It's greenwashing. I will not be supporting this motion. Councillor Hazem?
I feel like we're getting a little confused about making some kind of decision or based on whether or not we agree with carbon credits versus whether or not we're looking at this project. Now, this project was not about carbon credits or carbon pricing or cap and trade. This project is about quantifying what level of carbon is being contained in wetlands. So, you know, if we want to have a conversation about the federal government's policy about cap and trade, all of those things, I don't think that that is reflected in this motion or this presentation. And I'm a bit concerned that these two ideas are becoming confused and muddled. They are separate. So the presentation from Abby, because there was some confusion about carbon credits, was for information only. That is not part of this project, nor is it part of this motion, as I have understood it. Could you confirm that, Abby, please?
Yeah, that is very much correct. And if I may, to bring some more clarifications, hearing all the comments. First of all, I think from the wetlands perspective itself, as easy as it is to put this aside, thinking it is always difficult to sell whenever it comes to natural assets protection and conservation, to sell it to the public, because public is never oftentimes able to see the benefits that they get from protecting those assets, because they don't really easily comprehend the monetary benefits that they get or the ecological services that they get from these assets. In simple terms, first of all, I think to compare, like, government should be investing in public transit, housing options, other things, but completely neglect protecting these wetlands and other natural assets would not really make sense if we really want to long live and protect our communities in the face of this climate change. Because we don't really understand once these wetlands are lost to developments and what harmful impacts it poses. We only get to know when a stronger hurricane comes in and our houses get impacted from flooding or other nuances. When it comes to assessing these wetlands, why this is essential, the very first thing where it all started was that we have invested in KCC in protecting those wetlands. We have invested $360,000. But the question is, do we want to continue to do that in the future? Probably not. Probably in the sense we don't have that kind of money to continue buying land and protecting and conserve. We have to find a cost-effective way. How do we protect and conserve these natural assets? And this very essential tool is going to help us do that, assign a value to these wetlands, to know which wetlands we should protect and which wetlands we can let go of to developments. Third point is, when they say, well, these natural assets have naturally been absorbing carbon dioxide, we don't really need to know how much. That is the thing is, because we don't know how much, is the question why we are not able to pinpoint which wetlands should we protect or not. We have over 4,000 wetlands in the municipality, and there is no practically possible way to develop regulations around it, to delineate those watersheds, to understand what or how, what kind of restrictions should we impose on those wetlands without fully assessing these wetlands. And we have to find ways of assessing these wetlands in a cost-effective manner. That is why the staff is strongly supporting this project, that it is going to open doors for our municipality not only to develop a tool which will be municipality-owned, which itself is going to be such a proudful thing that our South Shore municipality in Nova Scotia has developed a tool that could be used by other municipalities in Nova Scotia and will have our name on it, our brand on it, that this is a tool that has been developed and invented by MODL and by its own community members. Now, to say that will the tool be perfect in the first go itself? Of course not, because it will be, because it is going to assess only the wetlands in the Shawbrook lands. But the more this tool will be scrutinized, the more this tool will go forward, assess more wetlands. It is going to adapt, get refined, get calibrated, get better and better. And it's only going to provide us more and more value. One of the point was, like we often has discussed, is that we have already invested in KCC. Had this proposal come from another organization, would we have had a different stance on that project? Like if this was proposed not by KCC, because we have already funded heavily, but was it proposed by some other NGO in our municipality, would we have looked at this project differently? That should be questioned. So as you all assess this project, look at the bigger picture and not just consider the short or like the present things that you have in hand, like we don't want to protect our wetlands or we don't really care. Wetlands have been existing for years and will continue to do so. That will be total negligence. This is a golden opportunity where we are sitting at, where staff won't really have to do anything. Primarily, work will be done by KCC in partnership with the elite universities and First Nations, and heavily subsidized by the province. Had staff were to ask council in future the full project cost, and that will also put so much burden on the staff resources, because we have to assess these wetlands one way or the other. We cannot run away from it. And this is only the beginning. Wetlands, because it's only one part of the complete natural assets inventory, then we'll move on to forested lands and agricultural lands and other lands. We cannot let that go destructed, because we have to find a way how we protect these valuable natural assets. So in that essence, this project can be really valuable in long term, looking at the bigger picture. I think maybe that's it from my side.
Okay, Councillor Oikle, and then I think we'll get the motion on the floor.
So what then, convince me, what then is the difference between what Ducks Unlimited is doing right now with assessing some of our wetlands and what this particular project with one wetland is doing any different?
So the big difference itself is this is the toolkit that we are developing for ourselves. So once we have the toolkit, that means we can assess any wetland using that toolkit. But doing with the Ducks Unlimited, we have to pay Ducks Unlimited for every assessment that we do with them, which is a costly thing. We can't, like we just invested, we had the opportunity to assess these wetlands, only five of them, and that was only possible because Ducks Unlimited had received a grant and one of the municipality backed off and they asked us, like, well, we have a spot. Would you want us to do free assessments of five wetlands? And we were like, sure, why not? But that may not happen in future, right? We will have to pay for all those wetlands assessments, whatever we will be getting done by Ducks Unlimited. But this will be opposite. In this scenario, we won't really be, because we will own that assessment toolkit that will substantially reduce our cost of doing assessments of other wetlands throughout our municipality. And the more carbon value a wetland has, essentially, corresponds to healthier wetlands state, more ecological functions the wetlands provides. And further to that, although it is not a direct outcome of the project, but it can also lead towards carbon offset credit systems. Although the market is developing, we are not there yet, but that should not stop us from continuing our research and putting in more efforts. Because 5 years down the line, when the markets would have completely developed, we won't be able to compete at that level. We will be at stage zero because we never invested in that research. Our farmers, our property owners who have wetlands in their lands cannot monetize or cannot get benefits, cannot participate in the system because in the very first stage we didn't do this project, if that answers or convinces you. No?
Well, okay. Yep. Are we ready to put the motion on the floor? Okay. Councillor Wynot, are you prepared to move that motion?
To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that Municipal Council approve the funding of $60,000 to the Kingsburg Coastal Showback Wetlands Carbon Project budgeting, $30,000 in fiscal 2023-2024 and $30,000 in fiscal 2024-25, and furthermore, release of this funding is conditioned upon the Kingsburg Coastal Conservancy application being approved by the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund administered by the Nova Scotia Federation of Municipalities, and I so move.
Okay. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Haysom? All those in favor? Discussion on the motion? Councillor Moore?
This has taken up a lot of our time today, but I think it was very meaningful conversation. It explained a lot to me. I will support the motion only because it says, furthermore, on the release of the funding is conditional on Kingsburg on the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund doing their 70%. And if that does not happen, that means that we will not be funding this project. And I don't know if there'll be another ask coming down the road if this project does not take flight without the 70%. But right now, I will support it. I don't know if I will support another ask, though. Thank you.
Trudy, sorry.
I just wanted to point out in conversation with the KCC that there is a second round, that if they don't get accepted this round, they may look at applying for the second round and looking for that 70% funding again. So I know that there was a couple of discussions around them coming back, so I just wanted to make folks aware that they sort of do have a plan B if plan A does not work.
Yeah. Councillor Haysom, did you have something to add? Councillor Bell? Sorry. Go ahead.
I'd just like to ask a question. If MODL were to be making an application under the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund for another project, would this project jeopardize the ask for the other project? And one project could be worth a lot more dollars than the other. So I just want clarification that if in any way making two applications could jeopardize one or the other.
Mayor Bellavergetson?
I guess there is a separate committee set up through the NSFM that are evaluating each one of the proposals. And last week was a storm day for them, so they didn't get an opportunity to finish up their work. Then it goes to the minister from there. But as was mentioned earlier, there are different streams in the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund, so that within each one it would depend on the amount of applicants and so on. But as far as they're evaluating the project, not the municipality, is what their role is supposed to be. So will they? I don't know what weight is being placed, Councillor Bell, on that there, but we do have another application in to the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund for much more money.
For the clarification, that won't essentially jeopardize the condition because the applicants are different. In this scenario, MODL for the solar project is the applicant, but in this project it's the KCC. We are providing support to KCC, are one of the funding sources for them, but the other project, we are the primary applicant asking funding for specifically for us.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm not against KCC's work on this, and if they were to come forward and ask for funding for the purchase of additional wetlands, I would probably be supporting it. because that was also something that was reflected to me in comments that came back. It was just this particular project is how I've been directed to vote, and that is a reflection of that only.
Thank you. We're ready to go to vote. All those in favor? Do I have to go against first? Councillor Greek?
Yes, I am in favor.
And Councillor Staton?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So all those against? Sorry. Against are Councillor Bell, Councillor Oikel, myself, Councillor Wynot, Councillor Vino, and Councillor Staton. Motion's denied. Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break before we come back for the update.